Nancy?
Good morning. Anyone want to say hello? Okay, we'll wait.
Good morning, Nancy. I'm outside just coming in.
Hi, Elaine.
How are you?
Hey, how are you?
Okay.
Good. Is anyone else on the call, do you know?
I haven't heard anybody else.
Okay. Let's wait a minute or so and see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm outside harvesting some dill.
Really? What are you going to do with it?
Well, I think I'm going to take some of it. The little
Betty has arrived.
Put it in the blender with some water and then freeze it in ice cube trays.
Uh-huh.
And then pop it out and keep them in a plastic bag so I need them.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. What do you do with dill?
I don't grow it.
Oh, okay.
Only thing I think of with pickles, so I don't eat pickles anymore, so I don't use dill, and so we don't grow it.
Yeah. Well, ours just comes up volunteer now.
Has arrived.
That's the trouble with some of the things we plant. We don't realize it's going to come back to haunt us sometimes. I heard Betty. Anybody else want to say hello?
And hi, Nancy. This is Joanne.
Hi, Joanne. How are you?
Good.
And the attachment, sure.
Well, wait a minute. Which one is the attachment?
We will never tell.
Really quick question. Anybody know what to do about the little tiny brown ant?
We haven't had those. We get the great big huge ones when we get them.
We've had the big black ones. Marty said last night something about the little tiny ones. I came in the kitchen this morning, and it's so funny. They seem to like to walk. You know, I have tile on here. They seem to like to walk on the grouting part. And I had, in the corner, there must have been 100 of them.
They get better traction. They're not stupid.
Yeah. I get, you know that? I never thought of that. But it's just something is attracting them in that corner, and I have no clue why.
Or they may get more food in my house if they were doing it here because the grout isn't that clean.
The food ends up, you're right. Yeah.
Do they seem to tend toward any water?
No, this is away from everything. This is right where you walk in the kitchen. I don't even know why I looked down there when I was walking out of the kitchen this morning. I moved the ant trap there, and they are going in there, so maybe that's a good thing. They're also in the hall, and there's nothing there. What happens is they cluster together, and that's how you really can see them. I don't know.
Well, at least you don't. Yours are walking, and you can probably eradicate them easier. Mine are the flying ones that love to go from. And they don't quit on just the food. They go into my books or my papers and lay in between them and do the duplicate.
Oh, boy.
But at least
I know
what's real food, Nancy, and what's not real food.
I thought that these little ones go for food. I don't think the big black ones are looking for food. I'm not sure, though. And then you have to make sure that they're not termites or whatever. Who knows?
Anyway. I had the big black ones go after my hummingbird solution in the feeder. Ugh.
Oh, the sugar, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Well,
I remember years ago when we were in Hawaii visiting my cousin, the one who has the bees
honey.
And the honey, and we were sitting at his table, and there were ants walking, the little ones that I'm dealing with right now, walking across his table. And I didn't say a word. It was just interesting.
Now you got him.
Interesting how I remember that so many years later. But anyway, anybody have any lifestyle questions, thoughts, or concerns?
No, but I do know that you can spray with a vinegar water solution
to kind of interfere with whatever they lay down for the other ants to follow in their tracks.
You know what? That was one of the things that I had listed with cinnamon and black pepper. I forgot about that. That one, I think maybe I'll do that. I like the vinegar and water. Was it 50-50, do you remember?
I don't think it's high of vinegar.
Just Google it, Nancy, and it'll give you the formula, the best one used. Just put best. Put best vinegar water solution for ants.
Okay.
It'll give you the most popular one probably then, somebody that's done it 10 times before you.
Right. Okay. Thank you. I forgot about that one. I know if I put, and you can also use talc powder, but those things, you know, would kind of move around more than the vinegar.
Right,
the vinegar,
yes.
The smell, I'm sure, would go away pretty quickly after it's out. Anyway, thank you. Here's the thing on losing weight reduces psoriasis, which really, losing weight may help reduce symptoms of psoriasis, a new study shows. That's a chronic skin condition, as we all know. A growing number of studies have found that those with the condition are at increased risk of being overweight or obese and more likely to develop heart disease. Interesting that they're putting a correlation between the two things there. Published in JAMA Dermatology, said the link between obesity and psoriasis may be explained in part by a common denominator, inflammation, which probably is behind at least 98% of diseases. Anyway, obesity is associated with inflammation, and psoriasis, once thought to affect only the skin, is now known to be a reflection of systemic and chronic immune-related inflammation. Losing weight may improve psoriasis by quelling inflammation, the author said, should be part of an approach, quote, to effectively treat both the skin condition and its associated comorbid conditions in overweight patients, end of quote. That was in the New York Times. Oh, interesting. Never know what they're going to come up with. Then for anybody who's traveling, this is a really good tip that I read. Email prescriptions to yourself for trips. Before leaving on a trip, scan a copy of your medical and eyeglass prescriptions. Attach them to an email that you send to yourself. Then they will always be available at the nearest internet connection wherever you are in the world. It should also include the contact information of the doctors who wrote the script. And this is from the People's Pharmacy, Graydon's, and they say, thanks for this helpful suggestion just in the time for summer vacation. Losing eyeglasses or a prescription can ruin a trip. And another People's Pharmacy
has arrived.
More intake of fluids could ease constipation. I have had chronic constipation for years. It's probably contributed to my hemorrhoids. I tried magnesium, and it helped a lot for a while, but I had to increase the dose to get the same effect. Do you have any suggestions as to what I can do? The docs have only offered laxatives that are habit strength, desperately need help. And their answer is, the usual recommendation for avoiding constipation is to increase fiber. Recent research, however, shows that fluid intake may be much more important. You also might benefit from chewing sugarless gum, non-sugar sweeteners such as malazol and xylitol attract water within the intestines. Anybody have any comments on any of that?
Good. Both of those.
Yeah. There was an interesting, since we got on the topic of poop, which I didn't realize we were going to until I started reading that, there was an interesting thing on Oz that I watched within the past few days, and somebody who was perpetually constipated, who would hold her stool because she couldn't get to the toilet. And I don't ever remember hearing this before, and he said that when you do that, your intestines will be looking for fluid, and they will go to the stool. And if you do it often enough and long enough, and he showed a wonderful, you know, visual of this, the stool becomes hard, and he showed squeezing out the fluid from it and makes it harder to pass. And his recommendation was to, if you can't go to the bathroom when you really have to, drink water. And that will give the intestines the fluid they need and keep the fluid in your stool better so that you can pass it easier, which I don't ever remember hearing it put quite that way before. I know that Roger has mentioned that if your body needs fluid and it does and you're not drinking it, it will go to your intestines for it or to the stool, obviously. So I thought that was interesting. I don't know why. Anybody have any thoughts, questions, comments? Okay.
When you said that about the xylitol gum, I just brought down a bottle that had been in the coach of xylitol gum. I haven't even tried it, so that's interesting. It'd be something that, like you said, to travel with would be great, because the only time I seem to have any trouble with that is when I'm sitting a lot and when I'm flying, because I get dehydrated and I don't seem to drink.
There's a name, and I forget where I've heard, and probably on one of the doc shows, people who become constipated when they travel. I don't know, maybe it's called traveler's constipation. But there are other things that feed into it. Number one, you don't take the time. You're away from your normal routines. And yes, sitting and not drinking fluids or fiber probably definitely make a difference.
Linda Morse
has arrived.
I don't eat as much when I'm on the plane, but your body horribly dehydrates because of the air conditioning, for one.
Absolutely, and you're not moving around like you normally do.
And you're not moving around, yeah. And because you know, you don't want to get up and just keep walking the aisles. You look like some kind of a strange person.
Although it's good for you, that's for sure.
Yeah, maybe an unwanted strange person on a plane.
Sure, yeah. Here's an odds and ways and new ways to treat chronic fatigue. 1 million people, mostly women ages 4 to 60, have chronic fatigue syndrome, or getting up and going each day isn't, so getting up and going each day isn't easy. Only 5 to 10% of people with chronic fatigue syndrome recover from the wide range of symptoms that include fatigue, brain fog, and everything from digestive woes to peripheral neuropathy and environmental problems. 20% can recover when ongoing treatment from a medical specialist is combined with graded exercise therapy or cognitive behavioral therapy. The graded exercise therapy starts with basic low intensity activity like walking or stretching and builds endurance gradually and progressively, never doing so much that it increases fatigue or worsens other symptoms. The cognitive behavioral therapy offers goal-oriented guidance to change behaviors that may make chronic fatigue symptoms worse. Even more people might find relief if they use both of these therapies, the graded exercise and the cognitive behavioral, along with seeing a specialist, or if they continued those therapies for longer than 14 weeks that the study did. Other ways to manage symptoms: opt for an anti-inflammatory diet with lots of 100% whole grain and vegetables, and make sure to take 900 milligrams a day of DHA omega-3 from algae oil and 420 milligrams of purified, and in parentheses, it must be purified, omega-7 daily. Interesting.
Omega-7.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I've heard of that
one.
Well, it's a new one.
Yeah. Oh, isn't that nice? Female smokers bypass men and risk of dying from lung cancer. Another people's pharmacy. Magnesium supplement works for constipation. Oh, it's supposed to be the same thing I just read. It is. Okay. And then there's something here on generic. Numerous references in the medical literature as far as the antidepressant effects of curcumin, the active ingredient in turmeric. Huh. Interesting. Anybody ever hear that one before?
No.
No. I've been putting it in more and more things because it really doesn't have any flavor. You know, not like curry that's about the same color.
Right.
And
I put it in my stir fry. Boy, does it stain. Like I had a plastic, even my blue spatula that I used Sunday to turn my stir fry, it turned it a different color. So worth it wise on that one.
You know, it looks really nice in with rice. Because it makes it look like a Spanish rice. Maybe that's part of what they use, because I don't think of curry as being always that strong in Spanish rice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a big article here. In fact, the Docs, I think, yesterday, about antibiotics and how overusing them has caused some, it was the Docs. The Docs have to stop prescribing them when they're not needed, even for ear infections. I remember when Jamie, who had ear infections many, many times as a child, and finally one time when we went, he said, "I'm not going to give you amoxicillin this time, let's see what happens." And it went away on its own. So, interesting. Here's an article that's interesting. At one point, I remember when I went to my doctor, I thought, well, he's such a good diagnostician. He should be able to pick up everything in my body, which is so stupid to think. Nobody knows your body better than you do. And here's Oz and Royzen, speak up to help your doctors make an accurate diagnosis. Misdiagnosis is a persistent problem. 39% of U.S. malpractice payments are for non-diagnosis or an incorrect or delayed one. And all medical mistakes, diagnostic errors appear, of all medical mistakes, diagnostic errors appear to be the most common, most costly, and most dangerous. On the healthcare provider's part, misdiagnosis can come from fragmented medical records, overworked docs, errors in past interpretations, and lack of individualization of medical procedures and tests. Patients contribute to the problem, too. They may fail to commonly communicate symptoms or not mention family disease history. Obesity further compounds the problem. Asthma symptoms often appear like breathlessness associated with excess weight. One study showed one-third of obese folks who had asthma were misdiagnosed. Obesity also means MRIs and CT scans can be inconclusive. This problem has doubled in the past 15 years. But misdiagnosis happens to people of all ages, weight, backgrounds, and afflictions. Here's what you can do. 1. After any diagnosis, ask, what else could it be, and why did you rule that out? 2. Show up with a short list of questions, then speak up. Don't let the doc rush you. 3. Always call for lab test results. Don't wait for the doc to get back to you. 4. Share your medical info, diagnosis, test results, medications with all your docs and get them talking to one another. And 5. Get a second opinion. No good doc will ever object to you doing that. So, it just means to me that we're partners with the docs for our own health. And here we are right next to it with an article entitled Chubby Patients Get Chilly Talk from Docs. Interesting. Are docs nicer to patients who aren't fat? A provocative new study suggests that they are, that thin patients are treated with more warmth and empathy than those who are overweight or obese. This was done at Johns Hopkins. They got permission to record discussions between 39 primary care docs and more than 200 patients who had high blood pressure. Although patients were there to talk about blood pressure, not weight, most fell into the overweight or obese category.
only 28, and that's out of 300, 200, were of normal weight, meaning they had a BMI below 25. The remaining patients, 120, were obese, BMI of 30 or above, and 60 were overweight with a 25 to a 30 BMI. For the most part, all of the patients were treated about the same. No meaningful differences in the amount of time docs spent with them or the topics discussed. But when researchers analyzed transcripts of the visits, there was one striking difference. Docs seemed just a bit nicer to their normal weight patients, showing more empathy and warmth in their conversations. The study was relatively small. The findings are statistically significant. Not like the physicians were being overly negative or harsh. They were just not engaging patients in the rapport building or making that emotional connection with the patient. In conversations with patients of normal weight, the docs offered simple comments to show concern. For example, I'm glad you're feeling better, for someone who had experienced hot flashes. When a normal weight patient had trouble getting an appointment with a specialist, her doc shared her concern. I agree with you. That gets extremely frustrating when that happens. Another patient lamented a scar on her leg after surgery and ugly shoes she was forced to wear. And he says, you went through a lot, adding compliments to her spirits, to lift her spirits. You've still got great legs. Chunky shoes are still in. While such expressions of concern and empathy are not remarkable on their own, what was surprising was how absent they were in conversations with overweight or obese patients. And statements like these are no small thing. Studies show that patients are far more likely to follow a doc's advice and have better health outcomes if they believe the doc is empathizing with their plight. When there's increased empathy by the doc, patients are more likely to report that they're satisfied with their care and more likely to adhere to recommendations of physicians. There's evidence to show that after visits with more empathy, patients have improved clinical outcomes. So patients with diabetes have better blood sugar control or cholesterol is better controlled. David Katz, I think he's been on Oz many times from Yale, says overweight patients often complain to him that docs appear judgmental about their weight at the expense of other health concerns. You come in with a headache and the doc says you really need to lose weight. You have a sore throat. The doctor says you really need to lose weight. These patients feel like it doesn't help them, and they insult them, so they stop going. In dealing with patients who are overweight, Katz added, docs often show the same biases and prejudice as the culture at large. The problem may be compounded by the fact that docs are trained to deal with immediate medical problems that have specific solutions, like a pill to lower blood pressure or emergency treatment for heart attack. But obesity is a far more complex problem that isn't easy to solve and can be frustrating to docs. When we fix what is broken, we tend to behave badly, he said. Well, we can't fix what's broken. Cass said his grandmother, who was obese and was so tired of physicians' negative comments about her weight that she stopped going to the doc altogether, even when she developed a breast tumor. When she finally saw treatment, she was advanced. She had advanced stage breast cancer and died in her 50s. Wow. Every time she went to the doc for any reason, they wagged a finger at her and talked about her weight, Kat said. We need to understand that the stakes are very high. Solution, he says, is better training so that medical students and docs understand the complex nature of obesity as well as their own, perhaps some conscious, biases. Yale, for one, offers a continuing ed program for docs on compassionate and effective lifestyle counseling for patients. A lot of them are compassionate and don't realize this is going on. The antipathy for obesity is really rooted in our culture. We should expect better from docs and train them better. I thought that was an interesting article. After all, they are human and they are people. But we certainly expect more from our physicians. Anybody have any comments? Okay. Here's another Graydon's. Vinegar helps reduce blood sugar. Is there any truth to the theory that taking 2 teaspoons of red wine vinegar at lunch and again at dinner reduces blood sugar? Suggestions for controlling blood sugar, Dr. says I have prediabetes. There is some evidence that adding vinegar to a high-carb meal can moderate the resulting high rise in blood sugar. Adding vinaigrette dressing to your salad at the end of the meal, as the French do, is an easy way to accomplish this. Avoid highly processed carbs and sugar while increasing intake of vegetables and nuts, they suggest. Supplements such as vitamins D and selenium, fenugreek, bitter melon, nopal cactus, N-O-P-A-L cactus, may also be helpful. And one other thing, no, that's not that important for us because none of us is going to get pregnant. Okay. Anybody have any comments or thoughts about anything I went over today? You guys still there?
Well, I think you need to give the pregnant one, anyway, because I know we've got some younger people that listen on this call or go in on the recording.
Right,
and they, it might be useful to them. Let's not,
Okay. I know that none of us is in that category, but we do have children
right.
Who quickly anyway. Studies that show benefits of bed rest. Docs have been recommending bed rest to women with high risk pregnancies for centuries. Every year, 1 out of 5 pregnant women is placed on bed rest, usually to help prevent complications such as premature birth, hypertension, and miscarriage. They're arguing that confining pregnant women to bed for long periods is not a practice based on good evidence, and it may potentially be harmful. Nearly 40% of those still of women who were ordered to restrict their, you know, their activities, of nearly 40% of those still delivered early, about double the number of confined to bed, not confined to bed. Another paper studies could not find enough evidence to support the practice of preventing miscarriage, pregnancy-induced hypertension, or low birth weight. The researchers noted known downsides of bed rest, such as maternal weight loss, bone and muscle atrophy, and risk of blood clots. Because of the lack of evidence and potential for harm, American College of OBGYN advises against bed rest for the prevention of preterm deliveries. Doctors should limit its use until clinical trials prove it has benefit. Till then, he wrote, physicians should contemplate whether the risk-benefit ratio justifies prescribing it. So, I don't know. That's a new one. The first time I've seen anything on that one forever. So, any final thoughts or questions? We are at the bottom of the hour.
Just one tip, since we're so hooked on red lentil, I mean, Denny's just loving it. It's easy to throw in a jar along with some raw veggies, and the combination, you know, of the hummus with the raw vegetables makes it way more satisfying for a longer period of time, and especially also the lentils slow down the release of sugar in the body. And even there the next day from what I'm reading. And so for diabetics, it's really, really big. And I just was sitting here looking at something I picked up at the Dollar Tree, which is one of my stops usually on a semi-regular basis, because something that I would pay maybe 2 or 3 times as much for has been done in a knockoff. And yes, I know it's not made in the U.S. Well, some of the stuff is. It's not all imported. But anyway, is one of the old-fashioned canning jars with the bale wire. They have a knockoff of it. The metal stripping around isn't nearly as heavy-duty as the old canning jars were, of course. But it's very decorative, and it's all of a dollar. And I'm just standing here looking at one. I thought, you know what? Just for the nicety of showing it off, I'm just going to keep the hummus in the red lentil hummus in the refrigerator and that, and set it out because it's a little more attractive. You know, something that's easily replaced and doesn't cost. It's got a good rubber gasket on it. So if anybody's got a Dollar Tree nearby, they don't seem to have a large amount like they do of a lot of other things. I think people are picking them up very quickly for the price, and they probably hold at least a pint. So it's, you know, a good amount, but yet it's not too much, and doesn't take up that much room in the refrigerator extra, just the size of it. But I use glass jars anyway for almost everything. But anyway, just a thought.
It has its own top on it.
It has its own top. It's all connected, you know. You can flip it up, flip it down, and people get in the practice of doing that when you put it back that way. If they're kind of running, if it's on like an open counter where we do most of our family style meals, where they people can just graze if they want to. That seems to be the style for our family instead of a sit down around the table. Usually at some point we're all sitting down around the table, but with the numbers in our family and the numbers of children and people sometimes not arriving at the same time, rarely do we anymore sit down to a formal dinner, maybe at Thanksgiving. Well, Thanksgiving and Christmas, or maybe Easter would be the exceptions. We don't usually do it even at Easter. It's just Thanksgiving and Christmas when we're together. But anyway, it would serve a much better purpose for that also. So,
good idea. Thank you. By the way, I saw
like
Trader Joe's yesterday looking for almond butter. I don't know whether you have it out across the country, but there is a shortage of almond butter going on.
Really?
Really.
One of our markets, regular discount markets where they have so much of the bulk stuff, has two grinders, one's for almond butter and the other one's for peanuts. And so you can watch for that. Normally, it's way more per pound than just the almonds. If you go into a health food store, you're going to pay way more. This really is maybe only 3 cents more per pound than just buying the almonds.
Mm-hmm. Great.
But peanuts. So, you know, keep an eye out. I'm sure more of them will be doing it. The store name is Winco, but I know it's basically West Coast. So.
Yeah, I don't know that. All right, well, thanks for everybody's interest and participation. Have a good day.
And thank you for all your research.
Yeah, well, not research, it's our newspaper, but I enjoy reading it, so I share it. Have a great day, everybody, and we'll be back tomorrow with Betty.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Have a great day.
You too. Bye, guys.
Thanks, Nancy.
Bye. You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye.
To learn more about NECAN, we encourage you to contact the person who suggested you listen to this information.